Welcome, and I would like to thank you for holding and inform you that your lines are on a listen-only during today's conference until the question-and-answer session. At that time, to ask a question, you'll press star one on your touch-tone phone. Today's call is being recorded. If we have any objections, you may disconnect. I'd now like to turn over to Tom Skinner, Senior Public Affairs Officer at CDC. You may begin.
Thank you, Ed, and thank you all for joining us today for this Vital Signs telebriefing. Today's topic is HIV among youth, and with us today are Dr. Thomas Frieden, the Director of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, and Dr. Kevin Fenton, who's the Director of CDC's National Center for HIV/AIDS, Viral Hepatitis, STD, and TB Prevention. Both will provide some opening remarks, and then we will move to your questions. So I'd like to turn the call over to Dr. Frieden.
Good afternoon, everyone, or good morning, depending on where you are. This is Tom Frieden, CDC Director. Thanks very much for joining the call. Today, we're releasing a new Vital Signs report for December that provides a detailed look at HIV among young people in the United States. This is our future generation, and the bottom line is that every month, 1,000 youth are becoming infected with HIV. HIV, despite the great treatment that we have, remains an incurable infection, and the cost of care of a single patient is approximately $400,000 over their lifetime. That means every month we're accruing about $400 million of health care costs, and every year $5 billion from preventable infections in youth. Given everything we know about HIV and how to prevent it after more than 30 years of fighting the disease, it's just unacceptable that young people are becoming infected at such high rates. Reducing HIV among young people is a top priority for CDC. This is about the health of a new generation and protecting them from an entirely preventable disease. The report includes CDC data showing that young people today account for about one out of every four new HIV infections in the U.S. In 2010, people aged 13 to 24 were 26% of all new HIV infections, and African Americans and gay and bisexual men were hardest hit. The report tells us two very important things. First, too few young people are getting tested for HIV. In fact, well over half of the youth living with HIV today don't know they're infected. That's a much higher proportion than the less than 20% we estimate overall don't know they're HIV infected. Just 13% of high school students have been tested for HIV, and only 22% of sexually active high school students. Among those age 18 to 24, only 35% have been tested. Second, young gay and bisexual men report much higher levels of risky behavior than their heterosexual peers. A large analysis of high school students shows that gay and bisexual males are much more likely to have multiple sex partners, to inject illegal drugs, to use alcohol or drugs before sex, and very unfortunately also much less likely to use condoms. And that was true in general across every race ethnic group. New data included in today's release helps us better understand why HIV is taking such a heavy toll on young men who have sex with men, and it highlights the importance of addressing risk behaviors and improving our education and our efforts to address the epidemic in young people. As we work to drive down new HIV infections in all populations, we have to give particular attention on the next generation, especially African Americans and gay and bisexual young men. Every young person should know how to protect themselves from HIV and should be empowered to do so. Protecting our next generation from HIV is key to achieving the vision of an AIDS-free generation in the U.S., which is a key part of the national HIV/AIDS strategy. I'd now like to ask Dr. Kevin Fenton, director of our National Center for HIV, Hepatitis, STD, and TB Prevention, to discuss the report further.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Frieden. Good morning or good afternoon, everyone. This new Vital Signs report shows why driving down new HIV infection rates among young people is so important. I'll start by providing a more detailed look at what CDC's data on new HIV infections, also referred to as HIV incidents, tell us about young people and HIV in the United States. As Dr. Frieden noted, in 2010, young people aged 13 to 24 years accounted for 1 in 4 or 26% of all new HIV infections in the United States. But let's take a closer look at which groups of young people are most at risk of HIV infection. Now, the vast majority of newly infected young people, 83% of them, are males. More than half of new HIV infections in this age group, or 57%, are among African Americans, while Latinos and whites each account for 20% of new HIV infections. By risk group, nearly three-quarters, or 72%, of new HIV infections among youth occur through male-to-male sexual contact, while 20% are infected through heterosexual sex. Relatively few were infected through injecting drug use. Young, black, gay, and bisexual men are particularly affected, accounting for 39% of all new infections among youth, and more than half, or 54%, of new HIV infections occurring from male-to-male sexual contact. In this report, we also examined risk behaviors among high school students to better understand why the impact of HIV is so high among young men who sex with men. In a large study of high school students in 12 states and 9 urban school districts, young men who sex with men overall reported substantially higher levels of risk behavior than their heterosexual male pairs. So, for example, young men who sex with men were more likely to report having 4 or more sexual partners, that was approximately 39% versus 27%. They were far more likely to have ever injected an illegal drug, a startling 20% compared to 3%. Among the young males who are currently sexually active, those who reported sex with other males were more likely to have used alcohol or drugs before their last sexual encounter, 39% versus 24%, and they were less likely to have used a condom the last time they had sex, 44% compared to 70%. One finding worth noting is that young men who sex with men were also less likely to report being taught about HIV or AIDS in school, 75% versus 86%. Now, a number of factors increase HIV risk among youth, including interrelated social and economic conditions that can help to fuel HIV infection in this population. So, for example, high rates of HIV and other STDs in many African American and gay communities increase the risk of becoming infected with each sexual encounter. Young gay and bisexual men having sex with older partners, who themselves are more likely to be infected, also increases risk. Stigma, discrimination, and homophobia also serve as significant barriers to prevention, and many lack access to health care, so they don't receive the preventive services they need. As Dr. Frieden mentioned at the top of this briefing, the new report also contains data that shows that too few young people have been tested for HIV. Now, while CDC recommends routine HIV testing in medical settings for Americans aged 13 and older, only 13%, that's 13% of high school students overall, have ever been tested for HIV. Among those who have had sex, the percentage is slightly higher at 22%, though still far too low. Looking at a slightly older age group, those aged 18 to 24 years, we found that just 35% had ever been tested for HIV. CDC estimates that 60% of young people currently living with HIV do not even know they're HIV infected, and HIV infected people under the age of 25 are less likely, significantly less likely than those who are older, to get and to stay in care and to have their virus controlled at a level that helps them stay healthy and that can reduce the risk of transmitting HIV to partners. Now I'd like to turn the call back over to Dr. Frieden.
Thank you very much, Dr. Fenton. The vital signs makes clear that if we're going to see a generation free from AIDS, we're going to have to intensify HIV prevention for all young people, especially for young gay and bisexual males. At CDC, we're working on many fronts. For example, expanding access to HIV testing and proven behavior change programs targeted at those at greatest risk, including young men who have sex with men, both in the healthcare setting and in the community, because we know there are many young people who are not regularly seeing healthcare providers. So community locations like schools, community organizations, and other places are key for health education, outreach, and services. Second, we've launched and are supporting print, broadcast, and social media campaigns that help young people get the facts about HIV and other STDs so that they can protect themselves and reduce risky behavior. But dramatically reducing HIV among young people is going to require that all of us do our part, in schools, at home, and in communities across the nation. Young people themselves need to get the facts about HIV, resist pressure to have sex, drink, and inject drugs, talk to parents, doctors, and other trusted adults about HIV and sexual health, and get tested. Parents and families can talk to their kids early and often about HIV and sexual health and staying safe. They can ask their insurer if HIV screening is available without a copay, as required by the Affordable Care Act for most health plans. Healthcare providers should test people ages 13 and above for HIV and provide appropriate prevention services tailored for youth. And all Americans can talk honestly and openly about HIV to help combat the stigma and fear that keep people from seeking prevention and treatment. In addition, by improving what we call the treatment cascade, increasing the number and proportion of people whose infection is controlled, whose viral load is suppressed, we will reduce the risk for everyone in society. And that's a critical goal for us to work with communities, with healthcare providers, and most importantly, with people who are infected with HIV so that they can get the care and services they need to lead long, productive lives, to be healthy, to stay out of the hospital, and to not infect other people. At this time, we'd be very happy to take questions. Operator, can you please provide the instructions?
Thank you. At this time, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your touchtone phone. You will be prompted by our automated service to state your name, the help of the pronunciation. Again, that's star 1 to ask a question, and star 2 to withdraw your question. And one moment, please. One moment, please. Our first question comes from Donald McNeil from New York Times. Your line is open, sir.
Hi. The situation is terrible, unbelievably bad. Is there a plan? Is there a plan that has a prayer of working for doing anything about this? I mean, if 13% of all high school students are getting routinely test are getting tested for HIV. And the CDC put out those recommendations, that, what, five, six years ago, the testing ought to be routine. It's clearly not working. Many of these kids who are not being tested were children when the recommendations were made. Is there anything you can do to do better? Can you make it mandatory for having a test in order to graduate from high school? Can you advocate that? Can you do anything to increase the testing rates?
Well, Kevin Fenton here. Thank you so much for your question. So we agree with you that this is really not an ideal situation, and this is exactly the reason why we're focusing on youth for this World AIDS Day, as we focus on an AIDS-free generation. The National HIV/AIDS Strategy, for the first time, really gives us a roadmap to think strategically, to act nationally, and to have bold targets for addressing HIV in the United States. And dealing with HIV among young people is certainly a key priority of the National HIV/AIDS Strategy. And in the strategy, some of the key elements for addressing HIV among youth include scaling up HIV testing, getting more young people tested for sexually transmitted diseases,
but none of this
linking
yet.
Young people to effective HIV and treatment and care services, and of course addressing health disparities. But clearly the data suggests that we need to do more, and we need to do more faster. And that's one of the reasons why we're focusing on this issue today. Your point about whether or not we should be doing more in terms of scaling up screening and testing in schools is actually a very good one. And CDC has partnered with our state and local health department colleagues to look at very innovative ways of scaling up STD screening and access to HIV testing, either within schools or through referral programs. But again, more needs to be done on this area.
This is Dr. Frieden. Just to add to what Dr. Fenton said, we agree with you that these are unacceptable outcomes. This is the future generation, and this is the future of the HIV epidemic in this country. It's about people being infected with a lifelong infection that is both incurable and expensive to care for. I don't think there is a quick and simple answer to this. We are not in support of mandatory testing, but we do think that there are ways to make significant advances, and I would outline four that are interrelated and important. The first is improving the treatment cascade. So there are fewer people out there who have uncontrolled infection. There's a lower force of infection, burden of the virus in the community. That will mean that even at the same rates of risky behavior, which I'll get to in a minute because we hope to see those decreasing, but even at the same rates, there will be fewer HIV infections. So getting people tested, linked to care, on care, in care, and viral load suppressed will help in a major way. Second, educational efforts to reduce risky behavior are very important. This is the first time we've presented data that's in Table 1 of the MMWR and really provides shocking data on both the higher rate of risky behaviors and the lower rate of condom use. So we need to do education to reduce the rate of multiple sexual partners, illegal drugs, alcohol and drug use before the last sexual intercourse, and to increase availability of condoms. Condoms work. And fourth, to increase testing and linkage to care. Testing is not testing that finds someone who's positive is very important because it helps them reduce their risky behavior and get into care, but ultimately you want to prevent people from becoming infected. So we think that each of these four aspects of the response are essential to driving down the problem. There's no quick, simple, easy solution, but it's a problem that we can make significant progress against while by addressing all of these issues and working with healthcare providers to increase the awareness of where we are with viral load suppression and drive that number up is critically important. Currently, it's less than 30% of all people living with HIV in this country. So we have a long way to go, and making progress on that in each of these four areas will drive these numbers down.
But even if you doubled your numbers, these are all things you've been doing for years, the education, the condoms availability. Even if you double your numbers, you'd still be at 26%, and still many kids wouldn't know they were infected. Something new needs
to
happen.
If we double treatment effectiveness, we will cut in half, roughly, the number of new infections that occur. If we can knock risky behavior down by even 10 or 20%, if we can identify the highest risk groups and intervene there with services, with condom availability, with testing and linkage to care, I think one of the real lessons we have in recent years is the importance of focusing. And the MMWR also provides some specifics about geography. By focusing where the epidemic is hitting hardest, we can make the most difference.
Ed, next question, please.
Next question comes from Liz Sabo from USA Today. Your line is open.
Hi. I was wondering, rate of kids not knowing that they're infected, 60%. Have you ever seen that before? Is this new data?
The question was what was new data from this, and as we mentioned, some of this is updated data, some of it is new. The table one from the MMWR, this is Dr. Frieden, that shows that the men who have sex with males and females, MSM population, has a much higher level of risk than their heterosexual peers is new. Dr. Benton, do you want to?
And we also wanted to highlight the new HIV incidence data, which, as we said, indicates that nearly 12,000 young people become HIV infected each year. That, on average, is about 1,000 young persons per month. So these data are really bringing the focus to young people in the run-up to World AIDS Day as we focus on an AIDS-free generation.
And just one follow-up question. How has the rate of HIV infection been changing in industries? Is it going up in general or only in specific populations?
This is Dr. Frieden. In general, what we're seeing is HIV infections increasing in young people while they're decreasing or stable in older people. So it really is young people, particularly young men who have sex with men, especially African Americans, who are now being hardest hit by and driving the epidemic. Dr. Penton?
Yeah, so just to, I agree entirely with what Dr. Frieden has just said. The increases that we're seeing and have published previously are really being driven by the very significant increases which are occurring in gay and bisexual men, especially young men who have sex with men. And over the past few years, we've been very concerned about the significant increases we've seen in young black men who have sex with men. So part of what we are hoping to achieve today is not only the focus on youth, but the importance of being honest about some of the factors which are driving these health disparities and why young black and Latino men who have sex with men are at such great risk. And as we've mentioned earlier, high background prevalence of disease, factors such as stigma, discrimination, homophobia, and then many of the social and economic disadvantage that these young people face can place them at high risk of acquiring HIV. So any success we're going to have with dealing with this epidemic among our young people must not only include some of the individual level interventions of testing and linkage to care and getting people on treatment, but we also need to ensure that we're working with partners to provide supportive context for these young people to help them reduce or avoid risk.
Our next question will come from Daniel D. Noon from WebMD. Your line is open.
Thanks for taking my question. Dr. Frieden and Dr. Fenton, you both stressed the importance of treatment as prevention, and yet I'm pretty sure that many states have waiting lists for their AIDS drugs assistance programs. Can you talk about how once people are tested and found to be positive, especially those who are economically disadvantaged that we're speaking about, are going to have access to these treatments?
Thank you very much for that question. I'm going to ask Dr. Jonathan Merman, who's here with me from our Division of HIV/AIDS Prevention, to respond to that.
Thanks. Well, first, there's been remarkable progress in the waiting lists for the AIDS drug assistance programs. And last assessed, it's fewer than 100 people. From peaks at over 10,000 about a year ago, and that's because there's been efforts at the federal level to increase resources as well as at the state levels to focus efforts to try to help people who've been diagnosed with HIV to access the care they need. It's true, as we do better and better at diagnosing people with HIV and linking them to the care and prevention services they need, that the burden on the healthcare system will increase. But the good news is that effective HIV prevention is actually cost-saving to the nation, that you don't just save lives, but you can ultimately save money because of the costs for care that Dr. Frieden had highlighted earlier.
That was Dr. Jonathan Merman, whose last name is spelled M-E-R-M-I-N, from our Division of HIV/AIDS. Next question, Ed.
Question comes from Evan Brown from Fox News Radio. Your line is open.
Good afternoon. Thank you for taking the call. Dr. Frieden, you've been talking about increased education for young people. These numbers for young people are really quite alarming to me. You know, we've been pursuing AIDS and HIV education for what seems like 20 years for high school students. Do you think these numbers might make people rethink that perhaps maybe abstinence should be pushed a little bit more than has been? You keep talking about condoms and screening and education and curbing risky behavior like illegal drug use and multiple partners, but barring some type of bad blood transfusion, I would think that if kids don't have sex, they just simply won't get AIDS. Do you think this is something that should be more openly talked about and perhaps more offered or pushed towards students or kids, I should say, as a real option to their sex lives?
We want kids to get the facts about HIV and understand their risk. The programs that work best are multi-component, comprehensive school-based interventions. Those can include classroom-based work, school-wide interventions, that have been shown to decrease unprotected sex and to increase condom use. We also see from the MMWR data that for whatever reason, kids who are gay or bisexual were less likely to say they had received sex education in schools. Decisions about specific curricula are made locally and have to address local needs and realities. We believe that it's important that programs be comprehensive and multi-component. Data show that while a focus on abstinence is essential, because as you point out, abstinence is essentially the only way to make sure that you do not become infected, We also need to prepare all youth with the skills and information they're going to need to protect their health, not only in high school, but throughout their life. We have an obligation also to protect the health of the substantial proportion of youth who are sexually active. Half of all high school students have had sex, and more than a third are currently sexually active. It's also crucial that curricula be medically accurate, and we have to correct a lot of myths and misconceptions. And I can tell you, from having visited middle schools and high schools, it is astonishing the level of ignorance about basic physiology that many high school students and middle school students have. So providing factual information on how to protect yourself is something that I think we can certainly all agree on. So I think I would just say that what we advocate for are comprehensive multi-component programs and rigorously evaluating them to see how we can continue to improve them as we continue to improve all of our programs.
Next question, Ed, please.
Next question comes from Mike Stobie from AP News. Your line is open.
Hi, thanks for – actually, I guess my question was covered. I am curious, though, have you selected a successor for Dr. Fenton?
Dr. Fenton is irreplaceable. Dr. Fenton has done a wonderful job leading the National Center for HIV, Hepatitis, STD, TB Prevention for the past 7 years. And we're very sad to see him go, but understand that he'll be rejoining his family in the United Kingdom and taking a leadership position in a new CDC-like organization there, Health Protection England. So we are beginning a national search. Dr. Rima Kabaz, who is the Deputy Director of CDC for Infectious Diseases, will be the Acting Center Director in addition to her Deputy Director role while we conduct a national search.
Okay. Thank you.
Mike, do you have a question other than that one?
No, my other question was already covered.
All right, next question, Ed, please.
Next question comes from Heidi Spleet from Pediatric News. Your line is open.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I'm just following up on, though, you're not advocating that testing be mandatory, but what tips do you have for clinicians who are seeing, I mean, obviously that if the maybe some of the higher risk kids aren't seeing doctor very much, but the ones who might make it in there, or even just the ones who aren't, what tips do you have for clinicians on how to, if they're not actually testing, just introduce some more of the safety and prevention information?
The key here for clinicians is to make it routine, that it's routine screening. Just as we screen adults for high cholesterol, we screen people for HIV infection. And I think we have taken a while to adapt to the fact that we have treatment for HIV and that people who test positive need to be linked to care and followed up. But it should be routine, not so much gee, let's have a long discussion about whether or not you like this, but this is what we do. If someone refuses, that's their right, but this is what we do.
Okay, thank
you. Next question, Ed.
Next question comes from Cheryl Weitstein from the Washington Times. Your line is open.
Thank you so much. At World AIDS Day coming up, I'm wondering, will there be a specific goal or a specific campaign aimed at United States young people to reduce AIDS? And also, over in Africa, there's a voluntary medical male circumcision program aimed at, primarily at young men, teens, and young men. And I'd like you to just explain why that is not going to be pursued here in America. Thank you.
Let me take the second of your questions. This is Dr. Tom Frieden. I'll ask Dr. Kevin Fenton to address the first. In Africa, studies by CDC and others have shown that voluntary male medical circumcision can reduce the rate of female-to-male transmission by between 60 and 70%. And a number of countries in Africa, led by Kenya and joined more recently by South Africa, have done a terrific job of scaling up voluntary medical male circumcision. Interestingly, when we began this, we thought there wouldn't be much demand. There's, in fact, been quite good demand, and what we've seen is very safe and effective services widely scaled up. The epidemic in Africa is very different from the epidemic in the United States. It's primarily a heterosexual epidemic in Africa. The efficacy of circumcision in reducing the risk among men who have sex with men is unproven and does not seem to be anywhere near, if at all, if it's protective at all, it doesn't seem to be anywhere near the level of efficacy in preventing female-to-male transmission. Dr. Fenton?
So your first question was related to World AIDS Day and the theme of an AIDS-free generation. And yes, across the country, there are going to be both high-level events in Washington, D.C., and of course across the states, which will really reflect on where we have come as a nation in the fight against HIV/AIDS. And using the theme of an AIDS-free generation to talk not only about what we need to do for people infected with or affected by HIV today, but protecting our youth from acquiring HIV. So this focus on youth that we are having here today is really going to be cascaded and reflected across the country for World AIDS Day. I think there's a lot of excitement here because we have effective tools. We have a good grasp of what some of the issues and the drivers are. So now what we need to do is to continue to press forward, continue to scale up the interventions that we know are most effective, HIV testing, linkage to care, education and awareness, and of course ensuring that we're working both with young people, where young people are, schools, community organizations, as well as parents, to have new and open and honest conversations about HIV and ending HIV in our lifetime. So that's what we're hoping to achieve this World AIDS Day and why this theme of an AIDS-free generation is so critical for the U.S. epidemic.
Excuse me, but there you're not at liberty, or is there no actual goal by 5 years we'll do this, or we're going to target this particular issue? It's all more general.
There's no goal that will be released for this World AIDS Day specifically related to youth, but the National HIV/AIDS Strategy, which was released 2 years ago, has very specific overarching goals for what we are wanting to achieve in the United States with respect to reducing HIV incidence and increasing linkage to care for all Americans affected by HIV.
Very good. Thank you so much.
Ed, we'll take two more questions, Ed.
The next one comes from John Cohen from Science Magazine. Your line is open.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I had two quick questions. One is, there's a 6.7 prevalence in youth and a 26% incidence. Is the trend showing that there's an increasing prevalence in youth given the high incidence? And my second question is just about the treatment cascade in youth. Do you know what the full viral suppression rate is in youth as compared to adults?
First off, yes, we're seeing an increase among youth. And for the rest, this is Dr. Frieden. For the rest, I'll turn to
Dr. Jonathan Merman will answer the question on the proportion of young people who are virally suppressed.
Right. So first, John, also you highlighted the proportion of all new infections that are in youth is greater than the proportion of long-standing infections that are in youth, and that's that makes sense epidemiologically, but it also from a population standpoint because people are living a lot longer with HIV infection than they used to, and then the second question you asked was, do we have data on the treatment continuum of care stratified by age ranges? And we do. We had a presentation at the International AIDS Conference, and we'll be able to follow up with you after this with those data, broke stratified at least by some age groups. It won't be probably the details that we would like at this time, but we'll have some stratification.
Thank you.
But I think, Dr. Merwin, it's correct to say that young people fare less well with the treatment cascade in the United States. They're less likely to be tested, less likely to be linked to care, less likely to be maintained in care, and less likely to be virally suppressed. And that really underscores the point that Dr. Frieden made earlier today, that a key strategy for getting ahead of the epidemic with young people is improving the entire system, improving the treatment cascade, and ensuring that we're doing a better job at each level in that cascade for young people.
Next question, Ed, and we'll make this our last question, please.
Our next one comes from Lawrence DeBizio from Examiner Health. Your line is open, sir.
Thank you for taking my question. This is for Dr. Frieden. Obviously, you know, there's social issues involved with requesting testing. And would it not be easier, since there are mandatory testings required for other diseases out there, for the CDC to request that it be made mandatory? Do you have a position on this?
You know, what we've seen with things like premarital syphilis testing, which was mandatory in many states, is that it just didn't work. We also have seen real concerns in how mandatory testing programs can proceed. But that doesn't mean it can't be done a whole lot better than it's done now. We think it should be absolutely routine in all doctors' offices. You know, for many important health tests, the largest risk factor for not getting it is that someone's doctor didn't recommend it. And here, you have a very, very small proportion of people who refuse testing, but unfortunately, relatively large proportion of doctors who don't make it routine. So one thing we do need to do is ensure that testing is routine for all age groups from 13 to 65. Now, in closing, I'd like to reiterate a couple of the key findings from today's report. 1,000 young Americans a month are being infected by HIV. That's 12,000 a year, at a cost for the lifetime of their care of about $400 million per month, $5 billion more per year. One in four new infections in this country occur among people aged 13 to 24, and far too few are getting tested, so that more than half of all young people living with HIV, 60%, don't know they're infected. Young gay and bisexual men are at much higher risk, with more partners, more drugs, more alcohol, and less condoms. It's critical that we reach young people, especially young African-American and gay and bisexual men, with HIV prevention and testing. We have to do so to see a generation free of AIDS. We're doing a lot at CDC, programmatically, with tested and proven prevention programs that target youth in communities, in schools, for Latino and African-American youth, for gay and bisexual youth. We're doing research to better understand health behavior and better evaluate what works in prevention. We're doing funding of community-based organizations. We have funded in the past year more than $55 million over 5 years for 34 community-based organizations to expand HIV prevention services for young gay and bisexual men of color and others at highest risk. This expands on a previous program to reach these populations. And we're working with a broad range of public and private partners, with healthcare professionals, to improve the treatment cascade so that more people with living with HIV know their status. More of them who are positive, more people who are positive, are engaged in care, and a greater proportion of those engaged in care are on treatment and have their viral load suppressed. That's the win-win of HIV prevention and care. That protects individuals and it protects the community, and that's what we're focused on at CDC. Thank you all very much for your interest.
Ed, this concludes our call. Thank you all for joining us. If you need further information or would like to request an interview or transcript, please call CDC's HIV Media Office at 404-639-8895, or you can also call the main CDC Press Office at 404-639-3286. Once again, thank you for joining us.
At this time, now would conclude today's conference. You may disconnect, and thank you for your attendance.